Hey, you're listening to episode 14 of Superheroes Meet. In this episode, John Ben and I sit down and cover San Diego Comic-Con 2013. We weren't able to get to the convention this year, so we did what we thought was the next best thing. We sat down and talked about all the great news that came out of the convention. Maybe we'll get to go next year. Also, you'll notice maybe about halfway through this episode, Ben disappears and he had to go off and do some work, but John and I were able to soldier through without him. Finally, at the end of this episode, we do our first ever Superhero Speaks contest. I'm going to tell a story and then give you detail on how you, our listener, can win a Superhero Speaks t-shirt. Listen to the story and try to win. Hope you enjoy. And here we go.
Nice.
We're recording.
We are so classy.
So I have a story about my daughter, as they often are. So we were visiting my in-laws, and they have a piano, or my parents, and they have a piano. And the one morning, my daughter is sitting at it, and she's trying to, like, she hasn't taken any lessons or anything like that, but she has an interest. And playing around and fiddling around with it and trying to, she's got some sort of semblance of a melody that she's trying to work out in her head, that she's trying to play out. And so I ask her, what are you trying to play exactly? And she's like, I'm trying to play the Man of Steel song.
Ha, ha, ha. I see where this is going. I'm so happy right now.
So I helped her out. I looked it up, and we learned it again.
You should have told her she could have just banged her hand on a cord. That would have worked.
Wish you had brought a piano and you could play it for us right now. Because everyone loves that score.
Yes.
So
it actually is growing.
So everyone, welcome to Superhero Speak. I'm your host, Dean.
I'm Ben.
I'm John.
And this week, we're going to talk about Comic-Con and all the news that came out of it.
Or at least all of our great experiences there.
Oh, we didn't get to go.
Oh, damn it.
Wait, that was all a dream sequence?
It was.
Damn it.
But we picked some of the top news stories that came out of there, and we want to talk about them. But listen
to
the...
In reality, there aren't that many horse cosplayers.
But
you'd be surprised.
But everyone, keep listening, because we're also going to have our first Superhero Speak contest. And we're going to do it at the end of this episode, so you got to listen to the whole thing. Or hit the fast-forward button, whichever you prefer.
You're not supposed to tell them that.
Oh, darn it. So anyway.
Basically, you win if you're one of our listeners.
Comic-Con.
That means all two of you. Sorry, go ahead.
So why are you so self-deprecating, John?
I have no idea. He
does what he's good at. So, obviously, none of us actually made it to Comic-Con, but we heard a lot about it. And there have been a lot of exciting announcements coming out of there. A lot of interesting trailers and things being screened that obviously we can't see because they are very tight about letting that stuff air outside of the Hall H.
Yes. But
we definitely can make a lot of speculations and voice our opinions on these things.
Yeah. Some of the stuff I found online, and I will post links on our Facebook page, I guess let's not start with number two, because that's the biggest news that came out of Comic-Con.
We'll get to that. So let's start with the Marvel stuff in general.
Right.
And I did actually watch the Marvel, board, whatever you call it, all those guys. And it was, the moderator was Chris Hardwick. From the Nerdist,
yes.
And presenting and Kevin Feige, and they presented and they talked about, and they had a lot of the actors there for a number of the movies that they have on the deck for the next year and a half or so, and showed trailers for most of them, and there was some exciting ones that came out of that. Like, they have, obviously, we know the new Thor movie, Dark World, is just a couple months away.
Yep.
There is new Captain America movie that's in the works. And there's the Guardians of the Galaxy. But they also ended with a nice little teaser about Avengers 2.
Oh, yes. Avengers 2. They announced the subtitle, as you call it, which reveals who the enemy will be. And it is Avengers 2, Age of Ultron. Not Ultron, which I have written on the paper. All right, people.
I was wondering about that.
Ultron.
Well, if they handle it right, he will be Ultron.
So, Ultron for the second Avengers movie. That
is a big leap. It's an interesting leap. I like the character. He's an interesting villain because he's driven by clear motives that, you know, it's similar to the Isaac Asimov, you know, robot principle of violence, that, you know, there's this premise that they're the flaw, you know, that they're trying to strive to be better and smarter than they're built to be, and finding that the inherent flaw is humanity itself. And that's the same, you know, force behind Ultron and what eventually leads to his turn towards evil, per se, and trying to enslave and overtake the human race because he sees the human race as the flaw, that the future is, you know, an artificial kind.
Right. And it's also, you know, I mean, we've seen it before in the Terminator movies.
Sure.
It's funny because the story is older than that from the comics. I kind of feared some people might walk away from the movie going, they steal that from Terminator?
No, and Marvel had that idea long before the Terminator movies came along.
Yes. One of the things that was interesting when they announced that, for those who haven't read the comics, don't know, Hank Pym is the one who actually originally created Ultron.
Right, and Hank Pym, also known as Ant-Man or Giant Man.
Yes. And they didn't necessarily say he wasn't going to be in the movie, but...
But there was an interesting statement from Joss Whedon that he basically came out and said that you don't have to have Hank Pym to have Ultron.
True.
Which I do agree with. I think you can do it. At the same time, I like Hank Pym's character. I like that storyline, and I wouldn't mind seeing that play out, but I can see why they might skirt around it for the purposes of this movie.
If they were true to the original
true to the original storyline. They haven't necessarily been true to every original storyline so far.
Sure. But
it's also not necessarily, to me, being true to the storyline. I mean, you can't tell in a 2-hour or 3-hour movie 40 years worth of comics, and I understand that, but...
No, and the movie universe is its own universe.
Right.
I mean, we also don't see the, you know, 30, 40 years of Tony Stark's history, you know, in the Iron Man series. He's already sort of defeated his battle with alcoholism, and that went on in the comics for decades.
Yes. But what actually I was hoping when I first heard it, before I heard the statement from Whedon, was, oh, wow, well, then they'll introduce Pym in Avengers 2, and then that'll lead into his Ant-Man movie. But...
You don't know that that's not going to happen.
I don't know that's not going to happen. I kind of hope it does happen.
Right.
To me, that'd be a great way to do it.
I mean, while Joss has said what he's said, they're also... I don't even know if they have a script yet.
No, he's actually writing the script. If you listen to the latest Nerdist, it's Josh Whedon.
Okay.
And and it was taped right before Comic-Con, and he said that yes, he's currently working on the script. He's working on the second draft, so they have ideas.
Okay.
Obviously in the works, so you know we'll see where that goes.
Maybe he's just taunting us by seeing how we react to the idea of a Hank Pym free Ultron. And John's sort of seething in both of our directions of
this
whole Hank Pym idea.
No, it's okay. I'm fine without him.
So let me throw a question your way then. So if we know that there's also an Ant-Man movie in the works that, who is it? Edward, someone or other. Good with names right now. Someone's working on that. And do you see that as having to be Hank Pym? Or could you see that as potentially skipping over him and going straight to Scott Lang as the eponymous hero.
Yes. No, didn't Hank Pym, if I'm remembering the storyline correctly, Hank Pym also became another character.
He had the whole Ant-Man, Giant-Man duality for a while. And then there, you know, there was all the drama of things and with his relationships and things like that, and sort of had a bit of a personality break and became Yellow Jacket.
Yeah, that's it. Because everything I know I've learned from, not comics, but from the cartoons.
Right. So. Yes, and I've...
and they covered that in the last Avengers.
I've seen those
Avengers.
Comics as well. That's why it's... So, yeah,
on Saturday morning.
Heroes, yes.
Yeah.
On Saturday morning in your Fruit Loops, in your pajamas.
They did
hey,
very
Frosted
well.
Frosted Flakes, man.
I will say that they abridged the Marvel comic history fairly well in that show.
Yeah, but they ended it with the Avengers fighting, what's his name, the Fantastic Four's ultimate guy.
Dr. Doom. Well, they fought Galactus.
Galactus.
Yeah,
yes.
and it wasn't the original storyline. Was the Fantastic Four stopped Galactus, not the Avengers?
Yeah, that's true. And but they also had multiple heralds for Galactus in that storyline. I think there was like four or five different elemental heralds that they presented in the first one.
Yeah, no, there were. That's something I think they've touched on in the comics as well, especially the Silver Surfer comic, if either of you have ever read that, where he talks about he isn't the only herald from Galactus. Galactus would go to different planets and grab people and make them a herald, and that's basically it was become a herald or die.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess you choose herald, right?
I don't know. That's a tough choice there. Like, either live potentially forever with the... Yeah, but live with the knowledge that your entire race has been annihilated, or perish with them.
So, good health plan, but bad on the satisfaction. Right?
Yeah, it seems potentially setting yourself up for a miserable life.
Sounds like a lot of places I've worked. All right. The other, you also had mentioned Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes. And they did have a whole panel of the actors from that. But they literally just started shooting in London. They haven't really gotten anywhere yet.
Right. Which is why there is footage, like a trailer that was thrown together. But it's very Rocket Raccoon heavy because
he's all the CG.
He's CG, right. So it was pretty decent. I mean, it wasn't like... You can tell it's beginning stages. They're putting ideas together. It didn't wow me, but it's like... I could see this going somewhere. This could be a decent movie. And
not only do they have a decent, because they have the team, and I assume the story also involves somehow how the team comes together.
Right.
But it seems like they have quite a cadre of bad guys involved as well. Because they have Ronan the Accuser, they have Nebula, they have Drax, or something like that, the Destroyer.
Okay.
And I think at least one other, and I can't remember his name. The Collector is.
Oh, okay.
As well.
Yes. And I kind of think, and maybe I'm wrong, that they might also tie Thanos into it a little bit.
It did sound that way.
Yes. And what's the actress you were talking about earlier?
Yeah. So Nebula's part is played by Karen Gillan, who is renowned for being Amy Pond.
There you go.
The fairly recent seasons of Doctor
Great
Who.
Doctor
yes.
Who, here, yes.
Yes.
What would you like to ask about Doctor Who?
Well, I'm a fan. I watch it as well. But you
I'm
haven't...
I'm away from the mic now.
You didn't watch the panel, though, video.
No, but I will now.
So, it was interesting, and I'm going to reveal it, so just, it's spoiled already.
No, go ahead.
So, they're all sitting there on the panel, and Amy, as I'm going to call her, Karen, is sitting there in the panel, and Chris starts talking to her about the role and saying, well, Nebula is traditionally, you know, she's a great character, but she's also known to be bald. And Karen's like, well, about that, I may have done something a bit risky. And she pulls off this red-haired wig she's wearing. Oh. She's completely shaved bald.
No one has a sad.
She still looked good, though, I have to say. She still looked pretty good.
It's Karen Gillan.
She is,
really,
yes.
Yeah, I mean... There was much crying when she left the show.
Yes, definitely. That was a sad departure. It was, I have to say, it was It was bittersweet, because at least you knew she lived a full and healthy life with Rory at the end. But yeah. Still, seeing her leave the show was...
It felt kind of abrupt.
It did. It did.
But now she's going on to better things.
Right. She's not, you know, going into the void like a lot of other people seem to have done. She's keeping busy.
I wonder if they not necessarily go into the void, but... They're British actors, so well, they're on British television shows.
There is a combination of that. You're right, because I know that like Billy Piper did some British drama after she had finished Doctor Who, and
she's doing Call Girl.
Right. Catherine Tate went on to do The Office.
Right,
and she was already a comedian.
She was already known, you know, comedian. David Tennant, I think, now has a TV show that's starting up. Like a detective show that he's involved in, but otherwise, yes. I think he's been doing stage work in between. So he did sort of have a bit of a gap there.
But he was also in one of the Harry Potter movies as well.
He was, but there was overlap there. I think it was both. That was while he was doing Doctor Who. But yeah, he was Barty Fink.
Yeah, he was disguised as. That I knew.
So. Right. In Goblet of Fire.
So
we're geeking in all different directions here.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, to bring it back to home then, who's going to play Groot? Is it going to be a poplar, an elm, maybe a metasequoia? Are they just going to, like, say, you know, like, attack, and then they'll have a cutscene to a tree, and you'll hear, I am Groot?
I don't know. They did not have anyone in the panel who I believe was specifically tapped to be the voice for Groot or playing the part. I assume it's going to be a CG role, you know, some sort of mocap type scenario there, similar to Rocket Raccoon. And then similarly, I don't think there was anyone on the panel who was playing that part either, and I'm not sure whether it's clear who those voice actors are, at least what's publicly known.
Which brings me to actually just a general question. You know, Marvel's had a very clear plan, obviously, with Phase 1 and Phase 2, then going to Phase 3. Does anyone think they're taking a major chance with Guardians of the Galaxy?
I don't think they are. I think that I consider Guardians of the Galaxy sort of it's part of Phase 2 technically, but I see it as sort of a tangent, as a separate, you know, outlier.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually a vehicle to introduce some of the more cosmically based heroes that have yet to be thought about or introduced. So, for instance, whereas I don't think we'll see a lot of direct injection of people from Guardians into the Avengers and other Marvel titles, but it gives a vehicle to introduce Nova and potentially Ms. Marvel. You know, or if they even make her Captain Marvel directly and avoid that whole transition. You know, things like that that are clearly based on these cosmic origins that they haven't really touched on so far.
Yeah. What do you think, John?
I think they should bring back Howard the Duck.
Okay, the door is right there.
No, as long as they don't go that far, their license for X-Men is... in somebody else's hands for the most part. So where else are
they? So
they
have
going
to expand
to
somewhere, yeah.
Yeah.
So
right.
I think there's the cosmic and there's the magic are the two areas they haven't really brought in yet.
Right. And I'm curious too, because it just feels like, you know, Marvel's on a roll. And this is not as well known of a property. It's not as popular unless you're a true comic geek. And is it going to be maybe something that slows down the Marvel machine? Or B, you know, I also find it fascinating, because it is a big risk. Like, you can put big name actors in it, but just because it's got Marvel in it doesn't mean people are going to go see it. And yet, in the other camp, it kind of feels like DC isn't taking as many chances.
They aren't, and I think that's hurting them. And to your point on it not being, you know, a less popular, well-known title and going that way, You can make the same argument a couple of years back about Iron Man. He was not well known.
True.
You know, prior to the Iron Man coming out as a movie. Or Thor, for that matter. The average, you know, American probably didn't know about those characters well. Obviously, we did.
Right.
You know, as comic book fans, we knew about these characters.
True.
And in their involvement in the Avengers and all those sorts of things. But the average person doesn't. The, you know, the norms.
The norms.
Civilians don't know these characters that well and are being introduced to them through these movies. So what the, as far as I'm concerned, obviously those have been successful. So I don't think there really is, I don't think that's an argument.
Okay.
They didn't introduce anybody.
John.
I really like Howard the Duck.
Okay.
but it depends.
Howard the Duck will come in when they bring in Deadpool and Squirrel Girl and She-Hulk.
Technically,
as
Deadpool,
a mercenary team.
Yeah. Oh, God. but, well, it depends. Depends on the writing.
Will we get our Deadpool movie?
Yeah. Oh.
Not for a long time.
Not when they can make 3D where they actually reach out and really grab you. Because that would be Deadpool, right?
Sorry, I derailed you.
They actually have a Deadpool video game out now that's pretty sure rated mature. Rightfully so.
Yes,
but I've heard some positive hype about it.
But they've actually, what, his property's been making the rounds. I mean, he just suddenly appeared in
Ultimate Spider-Man. Yeah, I saw that.
So, you know,
and it was a funny episode. My kids watched that several times.
Yeah, and it was classic Deadpool. So it's maybe they're shopping the idea around, bringing him back into the consciousness. Who knows?
Yeah, I like the joke too, like, where he starts laughing. So you said trap.
All right.
Anyway,
do we know who the writers are for Guardians of the Galaxy?
I don't. I'm sure IMDb does, but
well, that's just the thing. I'm looking at my. I'm not that I'm that.
Don't you know that Joss is just writing everything?
If Joss's name were on there, then there wouldn't be a problem. It would be awesome, and yeah. You know, they'd make money no matter what.
He's actually homing the show.
Yeah, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, so I don't think he's got time.
Probably not. I mean, speaking of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, yes, that was like...
That was also another thing that they talked about. And apparently, did they air the whole pilot?
Yes. When I read that, I wanted to throw something at my monitor.
I know. I was really wishing I could have been there.
It's got to be on YouTube somewhere, right?
No, they're really tight about those things. Like, I scoured the internet last night to try to find any of these videos out there, and I just could not find them.
So, see, what you guys don't understand is Marvel put all the money that they're making from these movies into making an actual Hulk, and he stands at guard at these events. And if they see someone taping the screen to put on YouTube, it crushes their cell phone right on their hand. So.
Yeah. Actually, did you see there was a mech that was built there was a YouTube video I saw with Adam Savage.
Okay.
And they sort of surprised him with this. Someone built, like, this mech costume. It's technically a costume, but it's really... fully articulating, like, 10-foot-tall mech thing that has a person inside of it controlling it, but it was impressive.
I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, track that down. And apparently he was walking around at Comic-Con all week.
Cool.
But...
that would be fun.
But on the topic of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., one of the things that we apparently found out from that is Maria Hill's character does show up and makes a cameo in the first episode.
Huh. Yes, and Kobe Smulders.
Smulders, yeah, who's also a regular on How I Met Your Mother.
Yes,
which I don't watch, but it's a funny show. But I would be perfectly fine with her being killed off in that show, just so she can make more appearances in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, that was actually something that was brought up at the panel. It is a cameo. She is in the pilot, but she isn't a regular on the show because she's still under contractual obligations of How I Met Your Mother. So.
Right.
That show's been on for, what, 9 years?
It's been a while, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's time for it to go away, so right. We can have her as
If I were the kids of that guy, I would have killed him by now.
As one of the fans of that show, I can say it really is time for him to meet the mother, because, you know.
Well, didn't they actually, I thought I read somewhere that they actually revealed finally who the mother was.
Maybe.
But, anyway.
Okay.
that aside, I think I also, because Maria Hill, or Kobe Smulders was also on the Captain America panel when they were talking about that, so I think she also appears in that to some degree.
I would imagine. And they're definitely going the Captain America as a member of S.H.I.E.L.D. group.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they have, we all know that, I mean, everyone's probably seen pictures and whatnot from the filming.
Yeah.
What's her name? Black Widow is
Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson is in the movie. She's one of the main characters. So.
Yeah, and it was interesting. They talked about that the two of them, like, are have a much closer relationship in this film. Like, they spend a lot more time together, Captain America and Black Widow. And so it's an interesting development there. And one of the issues I think with Cap is, you know, whereas traditionally the struggles that they come up with for him being out of time is the whole technology understanding of things. But in here, it seems like they're shifting it more towards his conflict being more about the change in values in how things were definitely much more black and white in his day and age. And there's a lot more shades of gray.
Right.
And a lot more questionable areas, especially in the line of work that he's involved in, that there's a lot of lines that he wouldn't have thought before of that he'd be crossing lines, but definitely might have to from time to time to in the name of freedom and justice and liberty and all that fun stuff.
Like he did in the Avengers. He kind of crossed the line. He took it upon himself to go and see what the hell they were doing with the weapons.
Yeah, that's true. They were making weapons. That's a good point.
They kept putting the idea was Tony Stark.
Yeah,
kept telling
him,
seed
of that idea of like, keep your eyes open, look around. Mm-hmm.
Right, and I guess, you know, you could also argue he crossed a very interesting line in the Civil War storyline in comics. You know, I mean, he chose to go against the government,
right?
In the name of, freedom. So
yeah,
it is part of his character.
I'm not saying it's against character, but that seems like that's what they're going to be highlighting in this movie.
Yeah, interesting take on the costume too. If anyone is
I've seen that. We'll see if that bears out to be true. But I like it. I like that costume design. It's the less traditional. It's more utilitarian, and it's more similar to the design that they actually have used in the comics, specifically when Steve Rogers became undead. He was no longer unalived. But Bucky was still carrying the helm of Captain America. He basically sort of took on his own costume persona as just Steve Rogers. And it was, I think they took out a lot of the red and had more just a blue and white look with stripes on the shoulders instead of in the ab region.
Right.
And things like that. But again, it's utilitarian, and it should be. You have to take these practical looks at these things when you're going into a live action approach.
No.
All right, fine.
I like my red and white stripes.
As we can tell,
Oh, I'm wearing a red and white shirt.
Yes, you
wasn't even thinking. So there you go.
He's talking about his underwear, but that's it.
Oh,
John, how do you know?
Those are different colored
shirts. Anyway,
moving on.
So yes, we missed the wonderful opportunity to see that. All right, I'm going to skip number six.
Also, getting very heavy debt as well.
No, you know what? I'm not going to skip number six at the moment. So this was an interest to me because it kind of says that definitely there is changes, I think, in Comic-Con and who's perceived as the right people for it. So for those who don't know, Metallica actually showed up at San Diego Comic-Con, and they're one of my favorite bands. They have a movie coming out called Through the Never, which basically is, I thought it was a concert movie, and then I saw the preview for it, and it's basically a night in the life of one of the roadies, and like a bunch of weird stuff happens.
Hmm.
while they're performing a concert. Like,
yeah.
And that's like the backdrop of the movie. So they came, they went to the con to, you know, promote the movie and I guess show a clip and answer any questions from the fans about it. But it's interesting because it's not a comic book related thing. And
yeah.
Just even a few years ago, I remember talking to people who were involved with conventions and they were like, yeah, San Diego won't, if you're not comic book related, they won't let you come. And now all of a sudden, you see more and more stuff.
Over and wider, broader audience of presenters.
And right. And I kind of, and I've said this, stated this before, and I'm putting it out there again, like, because it's become pop culture, you know, and now Comic-Con has become a media event more than really a convention for comic book creators.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, in a way, a danger to our culture? You know, and I'm talking about the nerd culture and the fact that what happens to pop culture goes away after a while.
I don't feel that way because I think that, for one, there are so many forums now for what Comic-Con used to be. You know, with Wizard World and various other, I mean, you of all people should know, there's
really
there's a lot of these different venues for people to get their material out
right.
there to the audiences that they care about. And yes, Comic-Con has grown into sort of something else, but it still is celebrating nerd culture. It's just the audience has grown. And I actually was reading an article yesterday about this past, this con, and another way that they've seen that is, you know, this is the first Comic-Con that hasn't had a Twilight movie as, you know, as being present and relevant in years, and yet there still was a huge female representation at the convention for a lot of other things that they were audiences of. And there's actually, you know, some people who are interviewing people in line, you know, or, like, even just in the line for the bathroom, that, like, ladies saying how they, you know, left their husbands and kids behind to come to this, you know, for the week.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely female nerds out there. I think, you know, that's an interesting stereotype that, you know, we think, oh, we only think of men when we think of nerds, but, you know, there are definitely women out there who are into comic books and into the culture. I mean, there's a lot of cosplayers.
Sure. I think that the media attention to it and the level of acceptance to it that has happened over the past even just 3 or 4 years that might have been somewhat shepherded by things like Twilight and things that are female oriented
right.
has allowed those female nerds to feel more comfortable in these environments and attend these things more openly and readily than they may have in the past.
Right. But I also kind of feel that in the same token, that it attracts people who like the Batman movie. And just because you like the Batman movie doesn't mean you're a nerd. You know, it just means that you like something related to the culture. You know, you can liken it to just because I like Italian food, I will never be Italian. You know?
True.
And a big part of being a nerd is, you know, you were rejected at some point in your life.
Oh.
You're made to feel like an outsider, and that's why we, you know, group together at Comic-Con, because that's where we feel like we belong.
Perhaps. I think those terms have been started to get used more broadly lately, and I did actually see a whole breakdown of, like, the whole nerd versus geek thing. You know, they're sort of used interchangeably
yeah.
in a lot of cases. But there does seem to be some delineation, a soft delineation in how they're used, in that a geek is someone who tends to be, you know, a fan of, you know, fanatic about something specific in some specific area.
Right.
Whereas a nerd is someone who's knowledgeable about a wide array of uncommon things. But doesn't necessarily, you know, and there's crossover between those, and someone can be both, in certain areas.
Right.
But there is definitely some degree of distinction between those camps. So I think what you're referring to is there's definitely a lot more fanboys, a lot more geeks to these cultures that are coming out of and presenting themselves in these forums and showing up, which I'm fine with. But it doesn't mean that it's crowding out those of us that are nerds, which I think is us. and people like us.
There's good and bad to it, though. I mean, just in case I zoned out, you didn't tell your story about when they read the thing on stage, right? When they read the for the thing.
We didn't talk
about
that.
Yeah.
We're saving that.
Is pertinent. This, when they read the thing you were telling me this afternoon.
Right.
You tell your story and then I can...
Well, okay. I guess we can use this as a segue.
Sure,
You know, the biggest news that came out of Comic-Con this year, obviously, is...
The biggest DC news
that came out of Comic-Con
this
year.
There
was DC news, people. So apparently, they talked about the next... Superman movie.
Correct. And the sequel to Man of Steel.
And they had an actor come out on stage. He played the general at the end of Man of Steel. Actually, no, he was the general on the whole thing.
But yeah, General Swainwick.
Right.
Oh, was that one?
Yeah, I'm just thinking of the scene at the end where he comes out and he's like, can we trust you? Blah, blah, blah. Of course, I'm from Kansas. And So he comes out on stage and he starts reading... a line,
so that quote.
Was a quote that was handed to him, and the quote is, "Clark, in your most quiet and private moments, I want you to remember this. I want you to remember the one man who beat you." Now, I'm sorry. Every comic book fan in that room should have gotten that right then and there. But if you watch the clip, and we will post the clip on our Facebook page, and I read an article about this piece of news that's available on MoviePilot, that there isn't really much of a reaction from the crowd on that. There's a few people, but like...
There's some upswell, but it's not huge.
Right, if you went back 10 years ago to a convention, there would have been a hush over the whole audience in that sense, because everyone knows that's a line from Dark Knight Returns, which is... Frank Miller. Yes. Probably the greatest and most damaging piece of comic book art ever created. And we've talked about The Dark Knight quite a few times on this podcast. And you know, so what happens is then on the screen behind them, you see the Superman symbol
fade in,
and then behind it comes up the Batman symbol. So obviously, Batman. Is going to be in the next Man of Steel movie or Man of Steel 2 screen, whatever you want to call it. But like that's what got me is like, how come people
the
didn't recognize?
The reaction didn't kick in until then.
Until they saw the
game up and everyone started screaming.
Right,
and that's the thing that kind of makes me worried. I mean, not worried so much, but I mean, just to give other examples. Okay, 20 years ago, you go to a Renaissance festival. And you yell out huzzah, and every single person from the age of being able to talk and up to, you know, 99 is going to yell huzzah back at you. Or you yell God save the Queen, and everybody's going to suddenly drop on their knee. You go to a Renaissance festival now, and there's just...
The waters have been muddied a bit.
Yeah, there's a lot of tourists, you know?
Yeah.
To the point where, and anybody listening to this who's a little bit older and used to go to Renaissance festivals, you might have remembered the pickle vendors, which they can't...
That's
do
not
anymore.
A euphemism, right?
No. It's they're real pickle vendors, but the things they used to say were pretty
or
euphemism.
Innuendos and...
Yeah. Or wrap your lips around this, or largest pickles in the Shire. And anyway, so they can't do that anymore because the audience is really... But it's a diluting of the audience,
right.
And I'm not saying it's a bad thing per se, because geek culture is a very welcoming culture, and we want to share all this cool stuff with other people, and we want other people to become geeks.
Right, and we're willing to dilute it a bit to not drive people away.
Yes.
The one defense I will give, though, to the whole Superman-Batman thing is I think that when I was... watching it, and I already knew I read the transcript of it before I watched the video of it, but I think what threw me is who they had reading it. Like, they had him reading it as if he was reciting a line, as if he were quoting it, as if he were the character who would be saying that to him, and I think that could potentially throw a little bit of pause to someone, like, instantly recognizing and cheering on and seeing what it was for what it was. Because I think if they had someone else read it, honestly, I think if they had someone else entirely, like, even who came up there before him, if he had read it and maybe done a little bit of a throaty voice along with it, a throat cancer voice, then I think the reaction would have been more immediate. But the fact that they brought that actor up, who had played a specific character in Man of Steel, some percent of the crowd probably assumed that he was reading a line he might say in the next movie.
I'll give you that. Yeah, because Zack Snyder is the one who didn't read the line, and I think he kind of thought, I don't have that deep, this is CNN type voice.
Perhaps.
So, but, I mean, I can do that, so why can't he? You know, it's... That would have been...
It's more like this.
I want you to remember this. Hopefully we don't get that.
I would have liked to have heard that Hulk you mentioned before to come up and...
remember. So...
Hulk smash Batman.
Hulk smash. So anyway, back to the news itself. Okay, there's a slight edit here because our co-host Ben got called away for a second, but back to the Man of Steel news. I'm just kind of curious about the whole thing, John, because it's an interesting move, I think, on DC's part. Like, yes, it's going to be cachet, it's going to bring people in, you know, it'll be a big film, but then I kind of wonder, is it DC being afraid to pull the trigger on any of their other characters and not having confidence in Man of Steel 2 to be able to do well on its own, even though Man of Steel did very well in the box office.
Wait, you mean I have to fill time now?
You have to give your opinion.
Look at Marvel. Marvel has a plan. It has stages. They're even rolling out characters you wouldn't expect them to. They're literally full-court pressing this entire genre. And what do we get? Now we're getting a Batman Superman movie that isn't going to be The Dark Knight Returns. They could have gone anywhere. Wonder Woman has been sitting on the sidelines for how long now? And they haven't been able to pull trigger on that.
Right.
You know, they could do Aquaman. We don't want to go that far. But, I mean, there's so many other things.
Well, they did say that at the convention, that's another piece of news that isn't on our list, but they are, Wonder Woman is officially in the works now, and it will be their next solo character property. I don't know who's helming it or anything at this point.
I don't believe when I see it. I think they've been trying to do that for, what, 15 years?
But yes, I mean, it's funny. I don't know if anyone's ever heard this before, but there was a time in the late 90s, early noughties, the 2000s, where you kept hearing different actresses attached to the Wonder Woman movie. And what it was, I found out, is Warner Brothers, to get actresses to do other movies, would go, well, if you do this,
yeah, we'll make you Wonder Woman.
And so actresses would be like, oh, okay, sure. And then their publicists would say, oh, they're Wonder Woman. And then 2 weeks later, you'd hear, oh, this one's going to be Wonder Woman. So they were just using it as a bargaining chip to get actresses into roles. But I kind of think with everything going on in the genre now, they have to move forward with it. It's got to be a done deal at this point. It'll be interesting. I agree with the logic of no one wants to sit through a Batman origin story again.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but when you look at the original 89 Batman, it starts off with him as Batman. There's no origin in it. It's just, I'm Batman.
Right.
In the words of the immortal Michael Keaton. And he, you know, there's like flashbacks, but that's really more the flashbacks of his parents dying that's tying Jack Napier and the Joker into being the murderer of his parents, which, yes, it changed canon, but, you know, it worked in that movie, and it, again, pointed to his origin a little bit. But there's no need for a big, long, watch his parents die and then watch him train for years. Like, you don't need that anymore. We all know who Batman is. We know the story.
Well, we don't know that's going to be the case at this point. I mean, there's all. I mean, given even the Spider-Man movies, how quickly they stacked up and, you know, relaunched that, I don't think they're going to relaunch Batman during this movie.
I think that's the logic, is that, or well, let's just bring Batman back in and act like he's been around at Gotham doing his thing. There's no need to retell his origin. But on the side of that, they've also made it quite clear that this is a different Batman. This is not Nolan's Batman. So if they're not going to give us any background on him, which they're going to have to in the movie...
It better not be Adam West's Batman. I'm just saying, right now... If I see shark repellent in the utility belt, I'm going to be upset.
You see everything marked in the Batcave.
Yeah.
With Bat something. Look, it's the Bat toilet. No, I don't think they're going to do that. But what I'm saying is, without any kind of background, characters can fall flat in movies, and you don't want Batman to fall flat. You want to be attached to him in some way, and have an understanding of this version of Batman. So now we've got to bring in Batman and have him come in a logical way. You have to bring in at least one villain. They've talked about Lex Luthor. They've talked about a bunch of different villains. And possibly bring in a villain for Batman to make the story coherent. Why are they teaming up? Or are they fighting each other? Like,
World's Finest. They could do World's Finest. If they did World's Finest, I'd be happy. Lex and the Joker together?
That would be cool. I don't know if they could get away with it, but it would be... They could do a take on that, I think. But the thing is, right, DC says at the panel, and again, there will be a link to the clip on our Facebook page, but Zack Snyder, after they show the logo and they make the announcement, he's like, hey, we don't have a script yet. So...
Which... Yeah.
So let's back this up a bit, okay? We all know that there are writers who write movies. There are directors who direct them. And then there are people at the company, like Warner Brothers, who are backing it financially, who come in and make suggestions and say, oh, we want you to do this, we want you to do that. And you kind of hope they don't have too much influence. But I don't know if anyone has ever heard the story. We've talked about this movie on the podcast before. There was supposed to be a movie in the 90s, Superman Lives, directed by Tim Burton and written by Kevin Smith. So, for those who don't know, Kevin Smith ended up walking away from the project, and it's one of the reasons it never got made. And he always talks about two different things when he talks about the project. The first one being... He went into Warner Brothers. They said, oh, would you be interested in writing the next the next Superman movie? And he was like, oh, I'd be honored, but there's a whole treasure trove of writers over at DC that know this character way better than I do. Shouldn't one of them write the movie? And, of course, Warner Brothers turns around and goes, oh, they're the comic book people.
Yeah.
Mistake
number one.
Right, we need movie people to write this. Okay. Fine. But now the next thing was, he said he's sitting in a planning meeting with different execs from Warner Brothers, and they put a prototype of a toy in front of him. And they say, work this into your script. So that's, you know, the marketing guys in the suits worrying about selling a toy and making money off the merchandising rights before there's even a decent script around. So that brings me back to, now they announced Batman is going to be in this movie, but there's no script. So they don't have a really good idea of a Batman-Superman movie yet. They just have, oh, let's throw Batman in here because that'll make money. And that's my fear, is that we won't get a good movie, we'll just get a mashup of Batman and Superman.
Which begs the question, why aren't they going to the stable or going to, you know, some comic book writers that we know are good, and or hire Joss Whedon. I hear he's good with these types of things. You know, or get somebody who is historically good with writing stuff like that. Like, you know...
Neil Gaiman.
Neil, or Straczynski, Michael Straczynski might do a good job, or Larry Niven, or, you know, there are writers, these writers have done stuff for Doctor Who and Star Trek, and usually the best episodes you've seen. So, or heck, you know, Moffat. Have Moffat from Doctor Who do it. He could probably do an incredible job.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of writers out there who have crossed over from the movies to the comics. One of my favorite writers, Jeff Loeb, he wrote Commando, and he wrote The Long Halloween. You know, so he's a screenwriter, and he's a comic book writer. Have him come in and write Man of Steel 2 or the next Batman movie or Wonder Woman. He'll do an incredible job, and he'll give you a story that comic book fans and moviegoers will enjoy. You know, I mean, it's sad, you know. I mean, Marvel did the right thing. They got a comic book fan to helm their universe.
He must get input from their stable, too. So
I would imagine. I mean, it's funny, he actually just talked about in the Nerdist interview that he you know, was reading hundreds of Avengers comics books, not only because he enjoyed them, but getting ready for this movie. You know, he wanted to really understand these characters really well before he wrote one line of dialogue. So it's, you know, that speaks a lot about, you know, the character of that writer, you know, and wanting to make something for the fans and not just something to appeal to a large audience and make money. And fortunately, it did both.
Yeah, and that one scene in Avengers where Joss Whedon made sure that they had a picture of Thor's girlfriend there and said, oh, she's okay, because they couldn't get... But they couldn't get the actress, so he made sure that it was in there, because I remember reading somewhere that he wanted it to be about family.
Right.
And he wasn't, a normal exec would have cut that out, saying, you know, there's no need for that, but he put that in there, and fans appreciate it.
Natalie Portman.
Another crazy thing, though, is I remember, and I don't remember if it's in a game or if it was in a movie, but there was the Batman Superman combined logo on a billboard. And if any of our fans know what I'm talking about,
I know it.
Oh, where?
I Am Legend.
Yes, that's it. And I read that in a Cracked article at some point. But, yeah, I'm actually looking at a picture now, and you can't see this because you're listening to four voices, you know, more than me. But if you look at the chess symbol, I think it was on, where was it? I'm not reading here, but I shouldn't be reading all that. But the chess symbol in one of the Superman costumes in the movie actually has the Batman symbol on it, just shaped out.
Oh, okay. So, all right,
they've known they were going to do this for a while, apparently. Or at least they were hoping.
True. Right, but actually the joke behind that was they had been talking about doing a Batman and Superman movie. The I Am Legend, like, had been talking about it, and it kind of got thrown in the back burner, like, oh, we're not going to work on it. And then so Warner Brothers was like, oh, we'll put a billboard in I Am Legend, and, you know, that's what the fans got.
By the way, 10 points to Gryffindor for that one. Thank you very much. Another person, Bruce Timm. If they had Bruce Timm, I mean... He could write a script at the very least.
Right.
And that script would be an ode to the fans. I would take that any day. Because he's been really, really good about that stuff.
Yes. So to sum up that, I guess what we're saying is we want to see a Batman Superman movie, but we're trepidatious because it feels like it's being done as a marketing ploy. We're hoping that the Warner Brothers executives who are listening to this podcast, because we know you're out there listening to us.
Somebody's listening to this?
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't supposed to tell you that. That you know, you'll heed our fears and give us a decent writer for this film.
So, do we want to end there and go over our little contest?
Well, just the last piece of news that came out. I bring this up because my wife and I are fans of Game of Thrones. I'm sure there are a lot of fans out there. Peter Dinklage, who plays Littlehand, if you know the books, and I'm trying to think of the character's name. Oh, geez. My Game of Thrones friends will...
We're doing really good tonight, folks. We're just going to have to wait while we actually Google this because, you know, getting old really hurts in the noggin.
All
right,
that's
dead air. Okay.
Dead air.
Did I mention that we shouldn't drink while we're doing this either?
No, you didn't mention that.
See, I don't follow Game of Thrones, unfortunately. I tried to read the books and I couldn't get into it. This is all my
Tyrion Lannister. Okay, so he plays Tyrion Lannister on Game of Thrones.
Oh, the man with the blue sunny.
And he actually is now going to be in Days of Future Past as Bolivar Trask. And for those who are fans of comic books, know that Bolivar Trask invented the Sentinels. So obviously the Sentinels have a big role in Days of Future Past, so he will have a big role in this movie. The only thing that's interesting, it kind of leaves us up to question. I don't think they addressed it in the panel, of course. They didn't. But in X-Men Last Stand, that role was actually played by an actor named Bill Duke. He obviously is not out, and Dinklage is in. And it was kind of I believe, if I remember correctly, it's been a while since I've watched Last In. It was kind of a minor role anyway in the movie, so it's not like they're, you know, replacing a major part that was played by it. And let's face it, folks, the X-Men have been, the X-Men franchise has been really bad at not following even its own continuity.
Yeah. So that's what you get when you split the franchise.
So that was big news. So for all you Game of Thrones fans out there, if you haven't heard yet, you'll definitely want to check out Days of Future Past because you're going to see Peter Dinklage as the creator of the Sentinels. So, now, the first ever superhero speak contest.
And let's face it, you have a 50-50 chance of winning.
You know,
I'm just saying.
This guy, you know. No. So here's the story behind this. I was recently at a convention, and while I was there, I had a really bad experience with a celebrity, and I wanted to tell the story on the podcast. And my co-hosts both said no
because we like our celebrities.
So. I've met a lot of celebrities. I've worked with a lot of celebrities. There are good ones and there are bad ones. I'm just putting that out there. So what we've decided is, I'm going to tell the story, and the story does involve the show. And what I'm going to do is, I'm going to leave the name of the celebrity out of it at all. I'm not going to say his name at all. I'm just going to refer. Oops. I'm not going to refer to this person at all as their name. It'll be the celebrity. And if you, after you hear the story, think you know who it is, we'd like you to comment on our Facebook page and let us know. And if you get it right, the first person that gets it right, I will send them a private message to let them know they've gotten it. I will still won't reveal who it is, and you will win a Superhero Speaks t-shirt. How's that sound, John? Does that sound like a good idea?
I'll go for it.
What do you think, Ben? Ben's not here. So he agrees. He agrees by not being here. So here we go. So I was at this convention. It was a 3-day convention. I'm not going to say where it was because that'll give a hint on who the person is. And it's somebody I wanted to meet. I thought they would make a really great guest for the show. And at the end of the first day, I didn't get a chance to go over and talk to this person, but their handler was there. So I went up to the handler and I said, "Oh, I see the celebrity isn't here. I'm a big fan. Do you think they would come on to my podcast?" And the handler turned to me and was like, "Oh, the celebrity really enjoys that kind of thing. I don't see a problem with that." The handler gives me the business card, says, "Just send me an email and we'll set something up." I said, "Oh, cool. I still really want to meet the celebrity. So can I come by tomorrow and say hi?" And the handler was like, "Oh, not a problem." So I leave the convention thinking this person it's a done deal. They're going to be on the show. I just have to send an email to this handler because they were presenting themselves as somebody who took care of that kind of thing for the celebrity. And as I'm telling this story, by the way, John is looking at me very intently to make sure I don't slip up.
I'm watching your pronouns, man.
So, thinking the celebrity is definite on the show, I even emailed John and Ben, and Ben emailed you back. I was like, "Oh, wow, that's amazing." So, next day, real busy, having it worked many cons, I know I don't want to be the guy that comes up when there's a huge line behind me. So I waited till there was, like, no line, and there was a lull where I was working. I went over to the table. I walk up, and the handler looks at me and goes, "Can I help you?" So right then and there, like, the face was flat, no recognition, and right there, the first siren goes off in my head, like, danger, danger, something not right here, danger. But I still persisted, okay? So I remember we talked yesterday, I asked you about the celebrity being on my podcast, Superhero Speak, and the handler's like, "Oh, that's right, right, oh, yeah, I'm sorry." I said, and I told them, I sent them an email, like, "Oh, I haven't gotten it yet, or I haven't checked my email, I'm busy." "Okay, fine." So I said, "So I want to meet the celebrity and say hi, is that okay?" The handler says, "Yeah, sure, not a problem." I said, "Also, I want to ask the celebrity in person to be on the show." The handler's face dropped. I mean, like, that I had taken this person's dog and beaten their grandmother with it. Just utter shock and disappointment in the face. And I was just like, okay. So right there, second, big warning siren going off in my head. Rant, rant, rant. Danger, Will Robinson. Danger, Will Robinson. Turn around.
You watch too much Lost in Space.
But I am an idiot. Also, yes, because it's like, well, I've gone this far. I've gone this far down the rabbit hole. I got to keep going. But I did say to the handler, like, should I not ask him? The handler could have, at that point, given me an out and said, "Yeah, it's probably not a good idea to ask this person." And I'm like, but no. The handler turns around and says, "You can if you want to." Just like that. Like, defeated, real quiet, like a completely different person than I was talking to the night before and prior to me saying this. So it was just like, there was the third and final warning, which I should have just turned around and walked away at that point. But I didn't. I walked up to said celebrity, and I put my hand out to say, "I'm a huge fan." And this person turned around and gave me the fist, did the fist bump. Fine, I know a lot of celebrities that do that because they, you know, I'm sorry, there is such a thing as con funk and you don't want to be shaking hands all day. However, I had seen the celebrity shaking hands of the people who just left the table. So, okay, fine. All right. The other thing I kind of should point out at this point of the story, there are celebrities who go to the cons to sell their autograph and make money, and there are celebrities who go there just to meet their fans. I thought this person fell into column B, but usually when you don't get any reaction out of them, because again, I had to say hello. The celebrity didn't say hello to me when I walked up to him, or her.
I almost tackled you then.
This person was actually even looking in the other direction, so I had to say hello. Usually that's an indicator because said celebrity noticed there was no money changing hands with the handler, realizes the customer in the line just wants to say hello, and if they don't really feel like talking to people, they'll shut down. And I kind of feel like that's what was happening at this point. So I just said, okay, I'm a big fan. I had made a joke. I can't say the joke because that will give away who this person is. They laughed, you know, they made a joke back. It was a pleasant little exchange. And then I said, oh, by the way, I have this podcast, and I was wondering if you'd want to be a guest on it. Now, you have to realize that I was really nervous at this point. I didn't know how the person was in real life. I kind of, you know, but after we joked back and forth, I kind of felt a little comfortable. Pardon me. And I kind of thought, well, this is a good time. This is a good opportunity to ask. And said celebrity crossed their arms in front of them and goes, well, let me think about that. No. Just like that. And it was just like, wow, that hurt. That kick. I'm down now. And you think, okay, it's going to end there. I'll say, oh, well, thank you for your time. Turn around and walk away. But the celebrity continued. The celebrity said, I don't do interviews. The only interview I do is on Podcast X. I won't say what show that is, because, again, it'll give away who this person is. And quite frankly, I would rather spend my free time with my pets. Yes, that is exactly what they said.
And then you heard from the Great Beyond Fatality.
Exactly. So not only did said celebrity push me down with the no, then they kicked me while I'm down because they said, I'd rather spend the time with my pets.
KO, you win!
So I just put my tail between my legs. I said, oh, well, thanks anyway, and walked away. So, regardless to say, the celebrity won't be on the podcast. But maybe you, our faithful listeners, had a similar experience at a con, or you've had a similar experience with this particular celebrity, and you know exactly who I'm talking about. If you do, again, go to Facebook under the link for this episode. Put your comments in there. I'll also take comments from Twitter, but it'll be hard to coordinate the both, so I really prefer them on Facebook. And again, it's facebook.com/superheroespeak.
And if you are said celebrity, we have no self-respect, we'll still have you on.
And also,
we'd be very glad to have you
on. If you are said celebrity, and you are the first one to guess correctly, you will get the t-shirt.
Yes.
Now, also, I need to state up front, for legal purposes, even though we're not doing this legally, family of the co-hosts of this show are not eligible. And anyone I've told this story to already who knows the answer, you're not eligible either. Sorry. But anyone else out there listening, you are completely eligible for a free Superhero Speak t-shirt. Again. And the crazier the guests, maybe the better. If you come up with one, if no one gets it right, I'll put it this way. If no one gets it right, I will, whatever answer makes me laugh the most, will probably get the t-shirt as well. So, with that being said, get busy coming up with your guesses, everyone. And for now, I will just say, as I always do, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Hey everyone, you just listened to an episode of Superhero Speak. This is Dave. You can reach me at dave@superheroespeak.com. Also, if you're listening to this through the website, did you know you can go to iTunes and subscribe to it? So, check us out there.
And this is Ben from Superhero Speak, which you can reach at ben@superheroespeak.com. And did you know you could also follow us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/superheroespeak.
This is John, and you can reach me at john@superheroespeak.com, and if you want, there's our Twitter account, @superheroespeak.
All right. Thanks, and check us out at those spots.